Hello, it's Elena.
And it's Candace.
And you're listening to Cousins on Crime.
So funny.
Just because the delay, oh. It's just like, I was waiting.
Can you hear me okay now?
Yeah, okay. I can hear you. It's just the whole delay here is messing me up.
Okay, well.
But, you know, we've been getting through it. Yeah. All right, so hope y'all been having a good week.
Yeah.
Have you been having a good week, Candice?
Yeah, so far. I mean, it's Monday. You know, ask me on Wednesday.
when the episode airs, it'll be a Wednesday.
That's true. So
I'm thinking ahead.
Yeah. I anticipate on Wednesday I'll be having a good week. How about that?
I like that. Okay. Well, we'll just get started. We don't have to do small talk. You know, we've already done our... It is Monday, isn't it? I'm a little...
You know what? It's Monday and it's late night.
Yeah.
It's my brain late is not night functioning. Monday edition.
I'm going to try to get started and get the flow going. So bear with
all
me,
right,
guys.
Let's flow.
Okay. All right. So today we're talking about Mrs. Olivia Walker. Mm. This is the case that Casey suggested to us.
Oh.
Did you read any of those articles or did you just leave it up for me?
I specifically didn't read it. For this reason.
Okay. So in 1982, 39-year-old Olivia Walker lived in Enterprise, Mississippi, just off of Highway 11. Lots of memories there for us,
wow.
Huh, Candace?
Yes.
So she lived there with her husband, Robert, her 18-year-old son, Philip, and 8-year-old daughter, Michelle. They attended First Baptist Church in Enterprise. Robert was a deacon there, and Olivia was the pastor's secretary. Robert was a mobile home salesman, and Olivia was a department clerk at Burlington Industries in Stonewall.
We should probably tell the audience our connection to that area.
Yeah, go for it.
So we grew up going to Mississippi two times a year, probably.
Yeah.
Definitely in the summer. And our family lived in Stonewall and Enterprise. And So we grew up in them woods.
Yes, that was one of our favorite things to do for spring break. We'd go see the family there.
And, yes.
See Casey, the one that suggested this case. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Hiking in the woods was fun to do out there.
We got into some stuff.
Yeah. Okay. Let me just tell y'all. I know you remember this, Candace. When we were hiking at Clarko and
yes,
you set up that whole scene with the rubber glove and tried to act like someone was out there to get us. That was
rude.
Good
times. We found this, so we used to stay in these cabins in Clarko State Park, and we found, like, their dumping ground,
mm-hmm.
And it was like this clearing in the middle of the woods, and it had mattresses and old nightstands, and then we found this, like, dead coyote or whatever it was.
Uh-huh.
It was like a chupacabra or something. I don't know what it was. But it was like the dried corpse of some kind of weird animal. And we had a heyday with that. We were like acting like we stumbled onto some crime scene or something.
Yeah.
Good times.
Yeah. And at one point, Candace went and hung a rubber glove up in the tree and made it look like there was blood on it. So... trying to trick me like there was somebody out
there. Cousins on Crime, OG.
Yeah, that's where it all started.
All right, back to the story.
Okay, so Philip, their son, had recently graduated and worked part-time as a DJ at the local radio station.
Oh?
At 6:35 p.m. on August 3rd, 1982, a call came in to Clark County Sheriff's Office from Robert Walker. He called to report that his wife, Olivia, had been murdered. He told police that he had discovered her body in their bedroom when he arrived home from work. Michelle had been playing at the neighbor's house at the time, so she was not home.
Thank God.
Yeah, I know. Within just a couple of hours, neighbors, friends, investigators, police, news reporters all filled their lawn.
Oh, wow.
Investigators did their best to be careful as they marked and listed the evidence at the scene. They were at the Walker house until the early morning hours that following Wednesday. It was initially suspected to be a robbery gone wrong, as they noted missing items. However, Sheriff David Earl Williams noted that the home looked too straight to have been burglarized. So her throat had been slashed. Yes, she was stabbed in the back multiple times and shot in the head. Yeah.
That's too much.
Yeah.
That's too much.
So they moved from the thought of burglary to a crime of passion.
Sounds like it.
Officers found the gun and the knife believed to be the murder weapons, but they would not comment as to where they found those items. Family, friends, co-workers, anyone that Olivia associated with were interviewed. The interviews started that night of the murder and lasted for about 4 days. The coroner's report and autopsy were completed, and Olivia was buried that following Friday.
Aww.
So back in those days, things were pretty fast. These days, it's like move slow.
Yeah.
So as the people of the small town arrived to church on the next Sunday, August 8th, rumors started circulating that Philip, Olivia's son, had been arrested.
No.
It was true. Philip had been arrested at 12:30 a.m. that Sunday morning, and he was charged with the murder of his mother.
Oh my gosh. That escalated quickly.
It did. At first, Philip had given alibis as to where he was during the murder. I couldn't find any information as to what he said. The night of the murder, he even went out and spoke to the reporters that were outside very politely, and he asked that they not take any pictures of the inside of the house, but he allowed a reporter to go to the backyard where other people were congregating, like neighbors and such.
Why?
Why
are people in the backyard?
Because
rubberneckers go to sleep.
Well, but this is a small town where everybody knows everybody. And so when something bad happens, you go take care of your people.
I guess, but like, do you need to go stand in their backyard? That's kind of weird.
I know. Have some respect, right?
Right. And remind me how old he was, Philip?
18.
Okay.
Yeah. I did see a report that said 19, so maybe he was like, he had already graduated the year. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He graduated a year before, so ultimately, while being questioned late Saturday into Sunday morning, he confessed and they arrested him right there at the police station.
Wow.
Yeah, it didn't take long for him to fold.
Yeah. Oh, why?
Well, the rumor was that he snapped after an argument with his mother over him doing his chores.
I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
A statement was released by the Clark County Sheriff's Office stating, "The reason for the crime has been given as a domestic quarrel. The suspect has made a statement to officers in the sheriff's department. The items taken from the Walker home have been recovered half a mile west of I-59 in a wooded area off Juanita Road. The arrest was made at the courthouse in Quitman after the subject was questioned by officials. Mrs. Walker died as a result of a major laceration of the throat. but also sustained additional stab wounds and one gunshot wound to the back of the head.
Lord.
The subject is being held in the Clark County Jail without bond. He has been carried before Justice Court Judge Tommy Touchstone for an initial appearance on the recommendation of the district attorney. Side note, Judge Tommy Touchstone. It's like a character from a Western. I love it.
It does sound like it.
Attorney Joe Clay Hamilton was appointed to represent Philip. Circuit Judge Henry Palmer signed an order requested by Philip's attorney for Philip to have a psychiatric examination. They wanted to evaluate how competent he was. As a local news reporter interviewed neighbors around town, they all could not believe or even think of such a terrible thing to happen in their small hometown. By most reports, Philip was said to be a good kid and was just an ordinary boy who stayed out of trouble. He played high school football, sang in the choir at church, he participated in Boy Scouts. He was in several news articles from back in the day with his scout group. They were called the Wolf Boys. And actually, Casey's dad was in one of those troop pictures. Yeah.
That's so funny.
So Thursday, September 23rd of that year, Philip was in the courtroom and he witnessed the jury being selected for his own trial. Reporters noted that Robert, Philip's dad, walked into the courtroom behind Philip and sat beside him at the defense table. Philip was visibly upset and cried as he sat at the table. Some reports said that he sobbed. He couldn't stop crying.
Yeah.
Robert cried right along with him. The courtroom was filled with possible jurors on the left side and spectators on the right. They watched as jurors were weeded out for reasons due to illness, age, or being too close to the family, etc. Mm-hmm. You know, all the things.
Oh, yeah.
Philip's defense attorney asked for a recess so that Philip could get himself under control. You know, because he kept sobbing. The request was denied. Shortly after that, the judge acknowledged that the only people that were really supposed to be sitting at the defense table is the attorney and the client. Yeah. So he then made Robert move.
I was wondering how that was allowed.
Yeah, I think he was trying to allow it to, you know, see how it went, but he realized it was more of a distraction.
Yeah. Hey, side note. Did you see the woman, like, last week who went and sat in the jury box?
Yes, and he's like, in the Murdoch trial, sit there.
And he's like, ma'am, you can't sit in the jury box. And everyone was like, what is she doing?
Yeah, even Harpootlian was, like, shaking his head. I know. What is happening?
And then she...
Who was like, she?
I don't know, but then she got out and just, like, walked in the front. Very slowly.
Yeah.
And I was like...
Right in front of everybody.
Weird. That was weird. Anyways.
Yeah. Well, I've seen them, like when the jury's not present in the courtroom at the Murdoch trial, I've seen a woman sitting there by herself, like taking notes and stuff.
What?
I guess she... And I think it was that same woman. And I don't know, maybe she just thought she could keep sitting there. Very strange.
Okay, ma'am. We all want to be on that jury, but, you know.
Yeah. Okay, so Robert was told to move and go sit in the front row of the spectators area. This only made the father and son cry even more.
Oh, no.
Yeah, a whole
Get
scene.
Get it together.
As Robert stood... Philip wrapped his arms around his dad's waist and just cried.
Oh, my gosh.
And poor Robert, he just looked at the judge and said, I can't leave him. But he was still directed to go sit in the spectator seats. My heart hurts for Robert.
Yeah.
I mean, your wife is murdered by your son and he's trying to still support his son. That's heart-wrenching.
Oh, man. Can't even imagine.
So once the jury was selected, they did take a short recess. As the trial was ready to begin, Philip composed himself. He had finally stopped crying.
Oh, good.
Well, apparently back while they were having a recess, they had a discussion. Apparently seeing the jury being selected for his trial was a little sobering, I guess. District Attorney Charles Wright stood and entered a motion that the charges be reduced to manslaughter.
What?
On condition that Philip plead guilty and not go through trial. So, Mr. Wright stated that Robert is a double victim in the case, in that he already lost his wife, and his son is now to be tried for her murder. They felt that the necessary testimony that would come out in trial would destroy the rest of the family, and that's because they were preparing to put Robert and 8-year-old sister Michelle on the stand.
Oh.
Robert had acknowledged that Philip had done wrong. He admitted it, but he begged for compassion and mercy for his son. So Mr. Wright had made the statement that Robert is faced with the problem of forgiving his son and trying to help him down the road. Mr. Wright also added that the psychiatrist validated Philip as fit for trial. However, the doctor opined that Philip had exploded that afternoon. The psychiatrist stated, as to what may happen in the future, neither he or I know.
Oh.
So in other words, he could do this again?
Well, exploded is the word. I mean,
yeah.
Snapping is one thing, like, I don't want to clean my room, Mom, and maybe you slap her across the face. That's snapping. Okay.
Right.
Taking a knife and then a gun? Come on. That's rage.
Yeah, exactly. So Judge Williamson accepted the motion for the lesser charge with the guilty plea. Philip stood and was given his sentence. Robert was able to stand at Philip's side at this point.
Huh.
And Philip was given the maximum, which was 20 years for manslaughter.
Huh. Okay.
The judge stated, in no way will I reduce your sentence. The only person that can do that is the governor or the president. He
wow.
said, it is to be understood by you and your attorney that this motion is accepted with the condition that there is no appeal in this case.
Wow.
Right. So Philip said, yes, that he did understand. However, he was eligible for the possibility of parole after serving 1/3 of his sentence.
Wow.
So five years is going to be the minimum requirement.
Holy moly.
Yeah. The approval of parole would be dependent on his behavior at the time that he was there. Philip and Robert hugged. And then Philip was ushered away to serve his time at the Department of Corrections at Parchman. Well, I hate to tell y'all this.
No.
But 5 years later, at the age of 24.
Oh, no.
Philip was released on parole by the state parole board. The parole board vote was 3-2 in favor of Philip's parole. So, 8 years later, now 1996, Philip was in Jackson, Mississippi. He was 32, and he was a manager at Watson Quality Ford. Do you want to guess what happens?
I just feel like you're going to tell me he killed somebody else.
Oh, well, he was arrested yet again. Why, you say?
Why?
You're correct. He was charged with 2 counts of capital murder. 2 counts.
Oh, Lord.
So he was arrested, and he was being held without bond yet again. Lucia Pippin was 47, and Christine Peake, she was 59. The women were found murdered at their home in Jackson on January 7th, 1996. Christine was a known drug dealer. She had AIDS, and Lucia was her caretaker. Philip had loaned the women a car from the dealership that he worked at in exchange for drugs.
Okay, solid plan.
Yeah. His supervisor realized that the car was missing or something was amiss, you know. When Philip went to their home to get the car back, Lucia refused to give it back. Well, you know, that made him mad.
Yeah, he snapped.
He snapped yet again. Investigators found that he beat the two women and then shot them.
Oh, Lord.
Sounds familiar.
Uh-huh.
He then fled the scene with their prescription pills, money, jewelry, and an answering machine.
Oh my gosh.
I feel like maybe he was calling them.
Oh,
leaving messages.
It.
Give me the car back.
Gotcha.
Or I'm going to kill you, you know?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, that's what my idea is.
Or maybe he was going to go act like he bought it at Radio Shack.
Try to get some money back.
Yeah.
I mean, did you get lots of money at the pawn shop for those things back in 1996?
I was but a wee lass, so I wasn't pawning anything at that age. Probably not.
That's why I'm thinking he was leaving some incriminating mm-hmm. messages.
Yeah, probably.
Or was he smart enough to even think that far ahead? I don't know. One evening in jail in the Hinds County Detention Center, Philip's cellmate was lying on the floor of the cell, looking through the crack of the door, trying to see the TV in the day room so that he could watch the Dallas Cowboys football game. I mean, you gotta do what you gotta do, right? So while his cellmate was doing that, Philip is laying on his bed and he cut his own throat and wrists.
What?
In an effort to complete suicide. He used a sliver of a razor less than a quarter inch square.
Wow.
When the cellmate got up off the floor, he saw Philip's arm hanging off the bed, and blood was on the bed. The cellmate called for the guards, and they immediately tended to the wounds and called for an ambulance. Philip received 20 stitches to his neck and 5 stitches in both wrists before being released back to jail. Didn't work.
Oh, man.
He was placed in a cell by himself and placed on suicide watch. So at this point, he was still just charged for their murders, not actually convicted for the double uh-huh. murder. He knew that if he was convicted, he would be sentenced to death. So this led him to this attempt.
Uh-huh.
A news article from July of 1997 quoted a statement from District Attorney John Davidson. He said, "Philip should have never been released." Yeah,
agreed.
He was released over the objections of prosecutors and the judge who sentenced him in Clark County. He also added, he is the perfect example of a sociopath. You've got this defendant who nearly cut his mother's head off at the age of 18, gets out of prison in 5 years, then comes back and brutally kills 2 ladies. If these killings don't call for the death penalty, I don't know what does.
Right.
One of the parole board members that opposed Philip's release said that anyone who could kill his own mother, there's just something wrong with that.
Yeah.
And with that person. Yeah. She said, I couldn't say in good conscience that he would ever be ready to be released. She also said that hearing of Philip's latest murders proves that she was right about trusting her judgment of character. And she said that there was quite a debate over his release at the time. Remember, it was 3-2, so.
Yeah, I was about to say 3-2. I bet the 3 feel stupid.
You know, I would not want to be that person.
Oh, I can't imagine having to live with that.
One of the board members that did support the release was questioned about it, and he said he couldn't recall the case, and he doesn't remember enough to be able to comment.
Oh, that's nice.
That's how much he cared for the safety of the public.
Oh, good. Cool.
Yeah. So Philip was quoted as saying that he wanted to enter a guilty plea and accept responsibility for the murders of Lucia and Christine. He just didn't want to go on death row.
Right. Well, you know,
it's always interesting to me that a person can kill so easily, but they're so afraid of their own death.
Yeah. Well, that is classic sociopath, isn't it?
Yeah. Ultimately, he pled guilty of both murders and was sentenced to 2 life sentences in March of 2022. While serving these 2 life sentences, Philip died of an undisclosed illness.
Oh, COVID?
Well, I don't know, but it was reported that his body would be sent for autopsy, but I have not seen any follow-up report.
Interesting.
So, yeah.
Undisclosed makes it sound like they know what it is. They just don't want to release it.
Okay. Yeah. If he killed someone with AIDS, maybe he was transmitted?
Oh.
I don't know.
Maybe that's why he killed her. Maybe he found out. Yeah, I don't know. Interesting.
But anyway, that's the end of the case that I have for you. But yeah, Casey, her dad was actually friends with Philip. Wow. As I said earlier, he was in the same troop picture in a news article with him. So Casey's dad went to the military and Philip went to prison. totally different. Or is it different now? Just kidding. I support our troops. But when Casey talked to her dad about the case, he said that when Philip was arrested, he remembers saying, "Watch, Philip will be out of prison before I'm even out of the service." And sure enough, he was.
Wow. That's crazy. You know, I don't pretend to be an economist or any person who could really speak to prison overcrowding or how all that works, okay?
Right.
But 5 years for murder, and just like our case last week, James Kodatich, when he served 11 years for murder, and then he got out and killed 2 more people that we know of, you know? And this guy killed 2 and more people. It's like, what do you think is going to happen?
I know we've done other cases, and Pee Wee Gaskins, come on.
Pee Wee Gaskins. I don't understand why, okay, you killed somebody, let's give you 11 years, 5 years. What do they think about, like, what is
you were 18
there?
At the time, maybe you're more mature now. Yeah, I don't know. And they did say, there was an article that said that there was definitely overcrowding at the time, and they did lessen or approve parole so that they can weed out and make more room. So,
okay, well, what about approving parole for maybe drug dealers or people who also not claiming to know anything about the war on drugs, but it seems to me that I'm safer around a drug dealer who I don't affiliate with than somebody who could murder me because they've done it before. You know what I'm saying?
But drugs could also make you go crazy to murder somebody. So, I mean,
true. But like most
point,
of them,
these parole board members have to. I totally forgot what I was going to say.
Yeah, weigh up the options of like who's a risk to society. Yeah. It's terrible. Like, I don't envy their position, but at the same time, it's like, come on, guys. We see this too much. A slap on the wrist.
Take your job more serious. Right.
Well, thank you for that suggestion, Casey.
Yes.
Hopefully we can
post
some pictures.
And thanks for sending all of the articles. Casey made my job so easy. She just sent me all the information. I just
Casey,
had a piece
you're
it together.
Hired.
Yeah.
She can be our first assistant.
You could write our cases for us.
Cool. Well, thanks for telling the story, Lena.
This was great. Let's do it again sometime.
Let's do it. See you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, thank you for listening to Cousins on Crime. If you're enjoying our podcast, please leave us a 5-star rating so that other true crime fans can find us.
If you have any case suggestions or just want to say hey, email us at cousinsoncrime@gmail.com. And be sure to follow us on Instagram, where we post case photos and information at Cousins on Crime Podcast.